TNT Radio wants to know what you really think, because your opinion matters. At TNTRadio.live, upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's Soapbox. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. You're listening to George Eliason, live from Donbas, Ukraine, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to the show, and today we're finally going to get to the actual headline on this, which was State Capture Brazil. And we're talking ultimately what's going on in Brazil with Lula da Silva. Who is this guy? Is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? Is he a socialist? Or just another fascist in waiting and wanting media attention? Now, starting last Wednesday, Thursday, yesterday, and today, we've done a big buildup. And we've explained a lot of the parts and pieces, the backgrounds of the piece, some of the people involved. And it sounds very, very expansive. But it actually boils down to very small groups of people. You don't want lots of people to know what's going on in this operation that are involved, unless they've got something to lose. Now, we're going to go through the timeline, how all this came together all the way through very, very quickly. And what you're going to see is, yes, there was a Joe Biden involvement, Hunter Biden involvement, Barack Obama, all these people. And this is one leg, one segment in what's going on today. This is the actual financing behind globalization, how they're going about it. See, the money has to come from somewhere. And why not take it from the governments you want to impoverish? Now, we spent a lot of time on Matthew Pagassi. We're going to do that today, but show him in action with Dominique Strauss-Kahn and his fab faves, the movie producers, who go in and soften up government officials. And their job was actually meet and greet, to open the doors, to figure out who's open to corruption and bribery. And they do that very, very well, these guys. And they've left a trail that's just so long that nobody looks at. Now, the reason why, well, I told you that one of Pagassi's men, Stepan Hooks, a Ukrainian Frenchman who's also a nationalist, who also is the CEO of the fifth and sixth largest media outfits in the world, will keep that under wraps. Besides the fact that everywhere they go, they take regime change information operations companies, and these are the premier ones. And by the way, when people talk about information operations, they look at it like a kiddie game in software, and quite frankly, none of that crap works. It's the small side of what it's about. And the companies that they took with them, one of them is the only company that DARPA certified their methodology works. Think about that. It wasn't DARPA funded. It was DARPA certified. Now, the DARPA funded research, and you have these outfits pop up and say, yeah, it was DARPA funded, like Stanley McChrystal's version. And all that means is that DARPA wanted to see if something worked, so they hired, different groups to do studies. Will this work? Develop something. Let's see if it works. And we'll fund the study. And that's all it meant. It meant nothing else. And the thing about it is, none of them really worked. None of them. Except for this one. And this is what's been in use in regime change as it's developed over the last 20 years. Now, we're going to get into, I hope we have time, we'll get into the 2016 election and beyond, because they were very much involved. in the takedown of Donald Trump, very much involved. All of Russiagate, they developed it. It was theirs. And this is the point that we need to make. Taking down Julian Assange in the media, making sure he got a trial by media instead of according to his rights as a human being in the UK, or being taken back to his home country, Australia, or whatever, they made sure that could never happen. They made sure. And it'll be very, very interesting to show how they took protections away from Julian Assange. Hoping to get into that today. If not, we'll get into it Thursday. Now, right now, I want to bring on TNT host and producer Didi Denslow, and we're going to talk about Poland today. And it's a big story about Ukraine. Didi, are you with me?
Yeah. Hi, George. How are you, mate?
Great. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm good. It's actually quite sunny here in the southwest of the UK. So I'm trying to soak up as many rays as I can. It helps dispel the winter blues. What's the weather like there in Ukraine?
Well, it's after dark and it's very cold where we are right now. Not as cold as it was a few days ago, mind you, but you know, it's probably about right now 10 below zero. That's about
Is it? Yeah, it's six above here, which is pretty balmy for this time of year. Yeah, the Poland story. Poland considered partitioning Ukraine, and I've come with you this story, really, George, to tap your knowledge, because you brought this up the other day when we was talking about the Ukraine conflict, and now this story's been published today that Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki has denied the claim, urging Radoslaw Sikorski to retract and weigh his words. Former Polish Foreign Minister Radoslaw Sikorski has suggested that the government in Warsaw considered partitioning Ukraine in the first weeks of the military conflict between Kiev and Moscow. His comments came in an interview with Radio Z on Monday, prompting a strong retort from the country's PM. Sikorski was asked if the ruling Law and Justice Party government had ever entertained the idea of dividing up Ukraine. He replied by stating that there was a moment of hesitation in the first days of the war when we all didn't know how it would go and maybe Ukraine would fall. Had it not been for the heroism of Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky and the help of the West, things could have been very different, Sikorski said. His remarks soon drew a reaction from Polish PM Mateusz Morawiecki, who accused Sikorski of behaving like a Russian propagandist. The former foreign minister must weigh his words. I expect these disgraceful statements to be withdrawn. I call on the opposition to disassociate themselves from Radoslaw Sikorski's declaration. It's not the first time that Sikorski has been at odds with the government in Warsaw. In September, the ex-minister tweeted, "Thank you, USA," alongside a photo of a massive gas leak caused by the sabotage of Russia's Nord Stream pipelines in the Baltic Sea. The suspicion is the USA and the West and NATO had involvement in that. Maybe Poland themselves were involved in carrying out this act of sabotage. Sikorski further congratulated those responsible for the act, saying the severe damage caused to the natural gas pipelines would force Russia to talk to Poland and Ukraine if it wanted to continue delivering gas to Europe. Good work, he concluded in a second tweet. He later deleted both tweets. So you brought up about, you know, the sort of the dynamics between Poland and Ukraine. What do you think about this story? Mm-hmm. And I'm all ears now, George, to hear your comments on the comments that this Polish government official has said.
Well, this goes back to 1918, but if we put that aside for a minute, and just after Maidan 2014, when Ukraine started the war in Donbas, Lviv was talking about seceding and going to Poland. That's what they want to do. Now, if you go back to 1920, you'll see why. Poland was divided in half. Part of it was in the Habsburg Empire. The other part of it was in Russia, which is part of the reason why they don't like Russia. Mm-hmm. The Habsburgs wanted to create a Poland. Poland, when I say it existed, I mean the land was there. There was no country called Poland. There hadn't been for a few hundred years. It did not exist. The Habsburgs wanted to create a new crown land. Okay, because, you know, you've got another prince that can't be a king, so we got to stick him somewhere. So we'll create a Poland for him. And his son was put in charge of a Ukraine project. And this is outside of Ukraine. Believe it or not, it wasn't in any place called Ukraine. They wanted to create a Ukraine. All right, and steal land from Russia and call that Ukraine too. Right. And they ended up, because the two partitions overlapped at Lviv, the what's called the West Ukrainian Republic wanted their capital there. And the people that were going to be Poland wanted that as their Western city because it was a cultural center. So there's, from that time, and they fought bloody wars, there were pogroms over it during and after World War I. World War II wreaked havoc. The Ukrainians slaughtered the Poles everywhere they could. And, you know, when you look at movies like Schindler's List, The Boy in the Striped Pajamas, when you look at all those World War II movies, especially the concentration camps, the Warsaw Ghetto, Krakow, that's all Ukrainians killing those people. All right. They did it happily because they were finally given the chance to win that argument. Uh-huh. So the Poles, in a real sense, never forgot that. Now, this argument, you had the Soviet Union come in and take over the area. This argument moved into the diaspora in the United States. You have what's called Polonia, which is centered in Illinois. They had, for the first 50 years after the war, they had the strongest diaspora political party. I mean, they could literally, not party, but a caucus, they could literally get a president elected. And presidential candidates had to keep them in mind whenever they were running things. But the Ukrainians became stronger. And during Soviet times, they argued about Lviv the entire time. The Polonia, the Polish Americans, wanted to take Lviv when it was freed from the Soviet Union. And the Ukrainians said, no, that's West Ukraine. Well, we see what happened. In the end, it was split off and given to Ukraine. But the argument is still there. Polish nationalists like Sikorsky want it back. And that's all. You know, it doesn't go any further than that. So will they take it? If Ukraine does very, very badly in the coming months, yeah, they would. It's acceptable payment. Poland's been there the whole time for them.
That was going to be my next question. You know, I mean, Sikorsky has made these comments. It's been slapped down by the current Polish PM. We could see the Russians over the coming months really try to smash and end this conflict in their favor. If Ukraine ends up falling into, you know, complete disrepair as a country, then excuse my sort of basic language, could we see then Poland really sort of have eyes on Lviv and the northwest area of Ukraine? And actually, would that then create another conflict? Because if you have a look, you've got Belarus, Slovakia, Hungary, Romania, Moldova. We've got all these countries that are bordering in a similar sort of area. Is this ripe for really sort of that Ukraine could fall only for further skirmishes, conflicts, and claims to land become the new thing, so to speak, in Europe.
Well, here's a kicker to the whole story. Radislav Sikorsky's wife is Anne Applebaum, and she organizes all the intellectual academic conferences for Ukraine. She's a Ukrainian nationalist. That's what she is. So they're handling this, and they provide a big balance between each other, okay, on this subject. Does she want Lviv? Well, Lviv wants to go to Poland. Ultimately, that's where it wants to go. Does Poland, the Polish people, want Ukrainian nationalists in their country again? That would be a hell no. They slaughtered, you know, how many Poles died in Poland during World War II? They haven't forgotten that yet. Uh-huh. They haven't forgotten that yet. So the whole concept here is to build a rubbing nationalism where these two will work together where they can. They'll fight against each other where they can't. And ultimately, you know, in 50 years, settle the conflict and become, ultimately, if they can work it out, they want to be Europe's army. And to hell with the UK, to hell with Germany, to hell with everybody. And that's the direction they're going in. So Lviv may go to Poland just for that.
And Poland would gladly accept it. And they'll probably create the conditions for that to happen, correct? Particularly if you're
playing
fools.
Oh, yeah. Yes, they will. 2014, we saw on my street two Polish helicopters go down. This Polish, you know, army, well, military, maybe ex-military, but they were Poles. Or they're taken down at the end of my street. I mean, that's how long, this was the spring of 2014, that's how long Polish military involvement has been here.
So it's quite deep. I have a final question for you, actually, George. How long have you been in Ukraine, in the Donbass? This is just personal questions for my own interest. So, you know, getting to know each other. How long have you been in Ukraine?
I've been in Ukraine since 2010. I've been in Donbass since 2012. I lived for 2 years in West Central Ukraine, so I know people all across the country. I lived actually on the Moldovan border, so it's pretty cool there.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually got a map of Ukraine. I'm staring it right in front of me. And what's the name of the town? Are you willing to give that away or?
Actually, no, I'm not.
No, I don't blame you. I absolutely don't blame you. I was just asking out of interest because you're obviously the only person that I speak to who's in that country. And hey, maybe I should get you on my show and we can have just a proper yap about Ukraine conflict sometime. Yeah, we'll sort that out.
Sure, that'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right. Thanks for, you know, the update today with Poland, and we'll pick up a discussion tomorrow. I mean, thanks again, Darren.
I'll
Brazil.
Okay, and I'll come with you a different story tomorrow. So cheers, George.
Have a good afternoon. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be getting back heavy and dirty into Brazil. This is DNT Talk Radio. I'm George Eliason.
You should hear what Dirk Pohlman is talking about.
Maybe you explain to our listeners how you became enemy of the state. Well, maybe not number one, but at least in the top 10 in Germany.
In 2021, for the first time, I went to Donbass. Didn't plan to stay there, but after I've seen what is going on there, so that this Ukrainian army is killing civilians there already for 8 years, I was shocked. and I decided to stay. I opened a Telegram channel and started to tell about the story of Donbass, about the people. After the special operation of Russia began, my channel got pretty popular in Germany because I was the only German on the ground. And Germany was supporting the Ukrainian government from the beginning, so they didn't like what I was doing and started to talk in a very bad way about me in all news and television, and even blocked the bank accounts of not only of myself but of my parents too. And yeah, this is how I became an enemy of Germany. I'm now in Russia and I can't go back because they also opened a criminal case against me.
The Dirk Pullman Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Public school is the instituted agency of socialism throughout every community.
The U.S. government has no authority to have any role in education.
We're going
to
lose our very republic if we don't stop this indoctrination of children in government schools.
What happened to us in China can happen here.
Have one kind of education and then call it equity.
It's about outcomes. It's about trying to force us all to be equal.
I think we're going to have a race civil war in our hands.
We are exposing kids to pornography as early as kindergarten. Parents just don't know.
No, not anymore. Not anymore. Parents need to wake up. They don't have the interests of your child at heart.
Truth and Lies in American Education at SalemNow.com.
Brazil's elections, just like America's, were stolen. Fight for democracy and fight for your country and take it back. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Now, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest or host that you'd like to hear on TNT Radio? Well, perhaps you have a topic you feel we should discuss. Well, then we want to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT Radio website. Help us make a difference on TNT Radio. Now, we are getting into Brazil, not just the elections, but what's going on, what's behind it. And it does go bleed into the Trump administration, everything that happened, because they helped set it up. And the information operation companies that these people used all through this were the ones that are running the media war today. Now, let's get into this. And we're going to actually start in 1992 because this is where one of the players gets noticed. Now, there's a 25-year-old Argentine hopeful named Fernando Sulichin who wanted to be a producer, and he got lucky. He was hired to be the assistant producer on Spike Lee's 1992 film, Malcolm X. And he was tasked with the job of delivering Nelson Mandela and Mecca for the film. Well, getting Nelson Mandela involved was what actually landed being able to shoot in Mecca at the time. Now, it looks like he was able to get Mandela to do that on his behalf. And according to Sulichin, they kept a close contact afterwards. And over the years, this enabled them to build an extensive contact list with government leaders, bankers, and Hollywood. Now, at the same time, in 1994, this banker that we've been discussing, who's doing all this dirty, Matthew Pagassi, was getting his career started at the French Treasury, where he's in charge of the debt and cash management for the French state. He started working for Minister Dominique Strauss-Kahn, 98-99, and then he served as the chief of staff to the finance minister, Laurent Fabius, from 2000 to 2002. From there, he goes to Lazard Asset Management and becomes their leader worldwide in debt management. Now, how do you go from a government job to being a billionaire in three steps? Well, So we have 1991, we have Malcolm X, and we have the connections made outside of this to South Africans, Nelson Mandela. And a relationship with Nelson Mandela at the time was the coin of the realm. It got you everywhere. Whatever star you wanted to talk to, or activist leader, or, I mean, just think about the possibilities. Nelson Mandela was gold. And that's how Solution played it. In 1999, Professor Ken Costa was appointed director of the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund in the UK. Well, guess who helped start the Children's Fund? It was Fernando Solution. He's been on the board ever since. That connection to Mandela opens a lot of doors across the world. This brought Fernando Solution, producer Fernando Solution, in the doors with Lizard, where he would meet Matthew Pagassi. In 2001, because of the relationship he had with Nelson Mandela, he was able to develop a relationship with Danny Glover, the actor, and he convinced him to go to Venezuela for the first time at a Trans-Africa forum. In 2001, Maximilian Avrilés meets Hugo Chavez in the UK. They get together at an event that Avrilés threw in Paris. And he starts working at the Venezuelan embassy in Paris. Now, this is done through Matthew Pagassi's guy, Ignacio Romanet. And they bring it together. Now, all of a sudden, he has these two guys. And what they're good at is getting indoors with people that otherwise they really couldn't. For the first few years, Pagassi and Lizard struggled in the early 2000s through the mid-2000s to get any headway in Venezuela. Hugo Chavez was making reforms that were monumental. Now, I'm not a big fan of socialism, that type of thought, or actually, you know, where it ends up. But what Chavez did for his country was bring a form of democracy back to the people. It was something that hadn't been experienced there before. So it's actually, at the time, a great move. His finance ministry closed people like Pagassi out of it. They wanted nothing to do with anybody that was going to come in and ultimately wreck the economy or take over parts of it. They were doing everything internal, which is a good thing. 2002, Pagassi becomes the managing director at Lizard. He's responsible for the renegotiation of $100 billion of receivables for Argentina. Now, that's just 2002, and he's in charge of the refinancing of the reconstruction of Iraq, and he starts work in Venezuela. In Iraq, it was the information operation company Bell Pottinger that was running the Hearts and Mind campaign. They went in first. They brought in Pagassi. So Pagassi is the one that's negotiating $100 billion of receivables for Argentina, the entire reconstruction of Iraq. Now think about that. Pagassi's man, Rafael Ramirez, was appointed to lead the energy ministry in 2002 by Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. Now, over the next 12 years, Ramirez siphoned and lost $11 billion out of PDVSA, which is the energy company, Venezuela's energy company. And he was moved to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in 2014. Maduro finally was able to fire the guy in 2017 after this whole story was unraveling and it was too late. 2004, 2005, Matthew Pagassi's guy, Stefan Fuchs, opens up Ukraine for Lazard and Pagassi with the Orange Revolution by bringing in a regime change IO operator, SCL, to foment the change, the revolution, and manage it. Now, see, we're talking about major events, but actually very, very few people involved. So Fuchs, I've already explained, is a CEO of the fifth and sixth largest media companies in the world, which means if he wants a story or a narrative told a certain way, even media companies like Fox are going to work with him. 2004, Danny Glover's first trip to Venezuela, presumably with Fernando Suluchin, and members of his Trans-Africa Forum opened a photo exhibition on the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in Venezuela. Right beside him was Ignacio Raymonet, Pagassi's organizer for the Venezuela Project. And at this point, he was also an advisor to Hugo Chavez. And they're softening up the ground. They're trying to get Chavez to allow them into the finances of Venezuela this whole time. Now, Arvelez is credited with initially bringing Hollywood to Caracas, despite the obvious lack of Hollywood connections, because he served as Chavez's translator to the visitors. Max Arvelez spoke English, French, and Spanish. Now, in reality, the chain events through 2020 point to Fernando Suluchin as the one that brought Hollywood, that brought all these stars together. We've already explained through South Africa. Now, 2006, 2007, after the Orange Revolution, Pagassi negotiates the sale of all Ukrainian cable TV distribution, that's internet, to foreign investors. An American investor owns Ukrainian internet. You can actually shut off Ukrainian internet from the U.S., a private company. It's not even owned there. 30% of the banks went to foreign owners. This was the payment. Now, what you'll see is that these guys don't actually buy these companies out themselves. They put themselves in a position where they can manage the money and they siphon it out. They're not in a position ever where they'll be able to lose anything. They have no skin in the game. And they drain countries like a vampire drains blood. And they do it over time. Pagassi and company started taking these windfalls in Ukraine and investing in Ukrainian energy. Now, the energy side of it, having the stocks, it's having money in the bank. You have futures, you have the stocks itself, and because of the position he's in, and this is a guy that deals with the London Energy Club, all right, and invests through them. And I explained it yesterday, you know, if you're going to join a club, this is the kind of club you want to join, because you join it, you pay a nominal price, you're invested in the energy in the country, and then they drain all the money out of it. You go in there, it's not a gamble. You're going to make money. That's what they do. And it doesn't matter what they need to do it. These information operation companies, the ones at this level, and this is, they're actually, one of them is the only one that can actually boast this, could actually put boots on the ground. They had to have military licensing. And they had to have permission to work, open up markets. Where are they going to work? Is it friend of the home country or foe? That's how serious this is. Now, Pagassi became the advisor to PDVSA and in its public offer to acquire the bonds of a different project, 2012. He also later on worked with Lazard to sell PDVSA's North American unit called Citgo, which was a big loss for Venezuela. They were cleaning it out at that time. Max Arveles was given the top embassy job in Brazil in, I believe it was 2007, sorry. And that's where the corruption really heated up in Brazil with Lula. Now, Lula had been in office from, I believe it was 2003, and they've been corrupting him ever since. Brazil had a few multinational construction companies that these guys were using to move money past bribes. Now, when I say multinational, to give you the scope, imagine a construction company being able to handle a $1 billion job on its own in a couple locations and overseas. They worked in South Africa, they worked all over the place. But here they were. The corruption in Venezuela had already started to the point where these guys were given contracts. They were paid, but they never started the projects. The money was going out of Venezuela through them. And it was being distributed first around South America in bribes and Europe and the U.S. And within a year or two, Hunter Biden would be going into the area looking to invest. Joe Biden would meet with Maduro in 2015. And when you look at a picture, if you look up Joe Biden and Maduro, there's Max Alvarez and Fernando Sulichin standing next to them, laughing. Because Fernando Sulichin, Max Alvarez, are actually Biden's agents in this thing, Obama's agents. They're working for the bank. They're not working for Venezuela. Even though Alvarez was an official representative of the Venezuelan government, he was working for Matthew Pagassi and Lazard at the time. Now, 2011, SCL began its groundwork for what would become the 2014 Euromaidan. And so they started stepping up on the buyouts of Ukrainian media. In 2013, and this is a big one because Hillary Clinton started considering she was going to run for president. Now, we know she wanted to, all right? She's getting serious about it. But a big hurdle in the way that they knew was going to come up was Julian Assange. So in 2013, they started the groundwork. How are we going to stop this guy, Assange, from derailing Hillary Clinton? Well, what they did was hire Trevor Fitzgibbon, who had the largest progressive PR firm in the United States. He represented Bradley Chelsea Manning, Edward Snowden, Julian Assange, and WikiLeaks. He was not the spokesman, but he did the media for WikiLeaks. So he's right inside. Well, in 2013, they hired him for the Maduro election. So SEL, the information operations company, was able to interact with Julian Assange's PR and gain insight directly into and from the company representing him. And this also marks a point for SEL to start corrupting Fitzgibbon's employees and get access into group leadership in the Free Assange movement. It was one of the routes they took. When you go forward a few years for the Trump election campaign, they tried at six different points to get inside first the Trump election and the Trump presidency. Two or three times, George Papadopoulos, Paul Manafort. It goes on and on and on. And that whole Cambridge Analytica Facebook fiasco, which was actually, it ran perfectly just like it was supposed to. It was made to blow up. But with Fitzgibbons and Assange, they wanted to know who this man was because he was standing up for Julian Assange. He was the one that was getting Assange media spots and people that were protecting Assange, people that were telling the actual story instead of the propaganda around it. And they wanted to know how to destroy his company, destroy him. And so that's what they were figuring out. So they hired him directly. At that time, nobody knew any of this was going on. Nobody. Nobody other than the people that were actually applying this were privy to that information. Now, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll get back into this when we come back. I'm George Elias, and this is TNT Talk Radio.
Childhood asthma linked to gas stoves in the home? Gas stoves a threat to the planet? Oh no, not another climate scare.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
A new meta-analysis claims 1 in 8 cases of childhood asthma attributable to gas stoves used in the home. But wait, it's a study funded by the Rocky Mountain Institute that has Todd Stern, the architect of the UN Climate Paris Agreement, on its board. The group is also a climate activist group seeking carbon-free buildings. No agenda here, right? Statistician Steve Malloy called the study classic junk science. And the study has been used by the Consumer Product Safety Commission to discuss a possible ban on gas stoves in homes. Before you take an axe to your gas stove, realize the states with the highest gas stove use have the lowest asthma rates. Also, as pollution has declined dramatically in the U.S. over recent decades, asthma rates have skyrocketing, showing no correlation. The National Institutes of Health also says the, quote, the exact cause of asthma is unknown. Don't accept the latest junk science on gas stoves. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
George Soros, as one of the United States' top political and advocacy donors, spending billions on campaigns, think tanks, startups, and non-profits that promote his agenda. His principal philanthropic network includes the Open Society Foundations and Foundation to Promote Open Society, two multi-billion dollar left-of-center grant-making foundations. Through these organizations, Soros has funded the vast majority of the most prominent left progressive advocacy groups in the United States. Financial ties between the Black Lives Matter movement and Soros have been reported, as well as financial ties to Occupy Wall Street through intermediaries like the Tide Center. The network of Soros-funded organizations indirectly touches 30 media organizations. George Soros spent tens of millions on political campaigns affiliated with the Democratic Party in 2016 and heavily supported Hillary Clinton. In the first 3 months of 2020, George Soros had put $28.3 million into various efforts to support the Democratic side in the 2020 election. In August 2021, Soros contributed $1 million to support California Governor Gavin Newsom in his recall election against Republican challengers.
Putin price hike excuse.
A massive economic downward spiral.
Thanks to Biden's war on fossil fuels and other policies.
40-year high inflation.
Rising prices.
Direct result of the bad decisions that Joe Biden has made.
Facing food shortages.
Today's News Talk Radio.
Worst president ever!
TNT.
Welcome back. Now we're talking about how Brazil has been state captured. And this timeline should really make the point because it's happening over and over and over again. Now, throughout all these intervening years, Lula da Silva is in office. Matthew Pegassi is making him look good, at least in the books. He's negotiating debt for the country, and they actually cut the debt down on the books. Within a few years, Lula da Silva will be in jail for the biggest corruption scheme in the South that ever happened. It was called Lavajato. But this is the buildup to that. Now, around 2011, DSK, Dominique Strauss-Kahn, wants to be the head of the IMF. But he can't quite get there on his own. Well, Brazil might as well be state captured. It's very, very close to that at this point. Matthew Pigassi is running the country. Money is being taken out of that in terms of massive bribes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So getting Lula's vote isn't a big deal because he looks great internationally. Oh, hell, Obama wants to make him the head of the IMF. Everybody's praising him. Everybody's this, everybody's that. When it's just smoke and mirrors, one, two, the Biden's and Obama big project is getting funded, which is globalization. Now, Argentina is already on the books as owned. Pigassi called all the shots and still calls all the shots in Argentina. They don't make a move without him. So to get Chavez to vote for DSK, they have the Kirchners call Chavez, who was a good friend of theirs at the time, and say, hey, Hugo, let's give this guy a try. He's a great guy. You know his people, they're working for you anyway. You know, they're working for us. Well, they actually own them, but, you know, whatever. DSK gets a nod to get the IMF because of this. And all it was ring around the rosy with corruption and state capture. Now, we go up a few years. Matthew Pigassi wanted to get into South Africa really, really bad because there were things going on there. There was a state capture going on that he wasn't a part of. So he contacts DSK because, well, honestly, Mandela's been gone for a while, and those connections are kind of burnt after that. All right? The Mandela Children's Fund kind of fell out of favor a little bit. He had a few new presidents. Some of them opposed Mandela, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you have Jacob Zuma in, but he's not really running the country anymore. It's immigrants from India called the Gupta brothers. Well, the Gupta brothers have a problem with PR, and they're afraid that the next election, a reformer is going to come in. What they want is total state capture. So DSK arranges for Pigassi to be able to invest heavily there, to handle debt there. They bring in Bell Pottinger. And this was Bell Pottinger's last job as Bell Pottinger. They had another company they opened. It's called Sans Frontiers. It's Without Borders. That's still operational. And all these companies, Big Splash went out of business, but they're opened. Still is something else, okay? And it's all planned, by the way. One thing you'll notice about this, and it's the reason the timeline's important, is that they're not planning for a couple of weeks or a couple of months or a year. There's a few years of groundwork that goes into each project, and that's why it's so successful. They know exactly what the ground can look like under most circumstances. So what happens? Well, they bring in Bell Pottinger, and what needs to happen is black on white violence in South Africa, and that's what they stir up. And white South Africans are being murdered, and nobody understands the reason why. I mean, this is wholesale murder. And guess what? It was an information operation. There was absolutely no reason for it to happen. Thankfully, it was uncovered by local media, and it's actually a documentary about it. Bell Pottinger was shut down, but Lord Bell was dying of cancer anyway. The Heritage Company was up running and good to go. No problem. No muss, no fuss. So what happened to Pagassi's investments? They made a ton of money. The debt soared. South Africa's reputation was in the gutter. They made a ton of money. Now, the South African people pulled together as a whole. And that was the one good thing that came out of it. But what did it take to get there? You had people that were driving their society apart. These are the same people that did it in Ukraine. It was SCL under Bill Pottinger doing this. They did it very successfully in Ukraine and in the U.S. Now, so we have that. That's 2015, 2016. We have Maidan going on. Now, the other thing to notice is that everywhere they go, the economies crash. And it's because they can buy up the debt. They can renegotiate the debt. They can make things work inside the economies. Now, they also work with companies like BlackRock. And you have someone like George Soros. Soros is one of them. But Soros is also part of the diaspora. So, you know, it's a kind of double whammy there. Now, going forward a little bit more, we're going to jump up to this election. Now, in 2015, 2016, Maduro finally said enough. Hugo Chavez had passed away. He started figuring out exactly what had been going on because it was all done behind Chavez's back. Chavez was sick for a few years with cancer, not paying attention. And the corruption because of these men being allowed to run rampant inside his administration and foreign service, it was just endemic. You know, when you're talking about losing $11 billion, that's just one company. One company. That's not the other resources in Venezuela. I told you yesterday, they also illegally sold the major media outlets in Venezuela, so there'd be no opposition in media. Guess who bought them? It was the Lazard representative who bought Cambridge Analytica, took them out on their first job. Now, I told you that came, but when you hire a company like that, you buy them out. So when they get paid, no money actually changes hands anywhere. It all stays within the company. Cambridge Analytica, the most they've ever had on the books is like 57,000. For Venezuela and only Venezuela, they made over $200 million in 1 year. That money is going into other operations. Now, that is just the information operation side. When we're talking about Pegasi, we're talking about the big dollars that are going into the globalization side. Pegasi's, you know, his big claim to fame is, well, I don't even own a house. I'm a rock and roller. I listen to The Clash, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Sean Penn is my best friend, man. Yeah, okay. Well, you know, I can't help you with your choice of friends. He also hangs out with this Ukrainian puppet man. And I'm talking about the actual stature of the guy. But when you look at that, all right, so he says he doesn't need money. Well, okay, he's hands on billions of dollars that are unaccounted for. Where's it going? Putting the whole globalization package together. That's where it's going. Oh, Sean Penn, his big interest in Vladimir Zelensky was the $1 million he was offered just to come to Ukraine and consider making the film. That's where all that money goes to. And that's how it goes. We didn't get a chance to get through as far as I wanted today, but you can see how this all comes together now. You can see it's actually this is one small section of it, but it's an important section because that's where the billions of dollars lie. And there are other sections to it. This one feeds the others. And you have guys like Soros. This is feeding his projects. money doesn't just come from Georgie Baby. It's coming from Georgie Baby's equals who bellied up at the table. I'm George Eliason. This is TNT Talk Radio. And we're going to close out on Brazil on Thursday. We have a great show for you tomorrow, and I'll see you then. Enjoy your evening.